Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome to the Newsbusters podcast. It's on a Wednesday, so that means we're free of a Trump trial today. So we're actually going to get some more coverage of the tense protests on campus. That was the CNN word just now. Tense. I think Curtis Houck is trying to tally up every day how much coverage the Trump trial is getting on ABC, CBS, and NBC morning, evening, and Sunday show. And he's over 200 minutes since last Monday. And one of these days we'll publish a number on that. Joining us in studio today from Connecticut is Rich Noyes, our longtime research, director of research. I was director of media analysis, you were director of research, and I'd be like, what on earth is the difference? You did more studies than me. But you had a study that we put out right before the trial, which underlined something we've done before, which is that they don't tend to tell us that the prosecutors of Trump are Democrats. In fact, they almost never do. You are kind to put it at 90%. I mean, that's accurate. But it's kind because two of the networks don't feel it's necessary to do it much at all.
Well, it's nice to be back in the MRC, Tim.
First time in the new headquarters.
It's, yeah, I like it. It's a nice studio. People can't see it, but it is a nice studio that does, you can get a lot of good work done here. What's interesting about this, we didn't talk about Jack Smith. We talked about Fannie Willis,
yep.
Letitia James, and Alvin Bragg. These are three of the people prosecuting Trump who ran for their positions as Democrats, appealing to Democratic voters with promises to get Trump. And this was all done, Letitia James' first election was 2018, Bragg was 2021, Fannie Willis was 2020. So there's no dispute that these are Democrats. They are, Fannie Willis, in fact, had a fundraiser for a Democrat in Georgia, and there she had not charged one of the Republicans because she'd held a fundraiser for his opponent. These are partisan people. Letitia James talked about running for governor when Cuomo left as a Democrat. They have ambitions for higher office. So to leave out their Democratic status is a glaring omission. To leave it out when Trump is making the point that these are Democratic prosecutions is really to skew the news heavily. I believe what I found, you've got the numbers in front of you, but I believe it was 90% of Bragg stories did not label him as a Democrat. It was more than that, 95%, I think, for Fannie Willis, and I forget what the number was for Letitia James.
Well, they're all remarkably low in every case.
That's right.
It looks like, I was trying to break out these all by network. So let's,
right.
So for example, with Bragg, NBC calls Bragg a Democrat or identifies him. You were so kind that you would count a D on screen.
Well, sometimes that's all I had.
Yeah. Which, is like we could all say, but they didn't actually hear they're a Democrat. And sometimes people are like making macaroni and cheese while the news is on. 16 of 59 on NBC. And I would say that's good enough in some sense. But the other ones, ABC, 1 out of 56. And CBS 0 out of 48.
Right. And I believe the one on ABC was the reporter quoting a Trump spokesman calling Alvin Bragg a deranged Democratic prosecutor or words to that effect.
That's exactly right. Aaron Kutursky said a spokesman for Trump called Bragg another deranged Democrat prosecutor.
And right. But that was not Kutursky's spin. That was relaying the Trump spin.
And
that was one time, and this goes back to the beginning of 2023, so this is about 16 months worth of coverage.
And this is where it's like this, they will put it in Trump's mouth and know that, for a large chunk of our audience, they don't believe anything that comes out of his mouth, whether it's true or false. And using the word deranged in there says, I'll use it here because it sounds extra paranoid or something. That whole notion, as you underlined it, which is these are people who are building careers on prosecuting Trump with the hope of higher office. That is simply not being relayed at all. We were just talking a minute ago about how they always called Kenneth Starr a Republican independent counselor, did it quite a bit, Dan Rather in particular. And your point was, I guess you could argue Ken Starr was hoping for a Supreme Court appointment. They did say that.
Right. Well, this is in the 1990s, and there had been a different Republican, Robert Fisk, who the Justice Department chose to do this. And then the special counsel law passed, and it became a three-judge panel. And they decided they wanted somebody who was not named by the Clinton Justice Department to investigate Bill Clinton. They wanted to pick their own guy, and they picked someone who would be adversarial. That was the whole idea. They wanted an adversarial process. So they picked Ken Starr. And the media at that point thought that was against justice, was to have this process. To have someone who would be adversarial to their president was something that needed to be pointed out. And it was discrediting to Starr that he wasn't a Democrat. Now we seem to have the tables reversed. You know, I mean, Starr never ran for office as a Republican. He was a Republican appointee. He was certainly a conservative-minded person, but he was not someone who ran as, you know, if you elect me, I will get Clinton for you.
Right.
And, you know, what you have in these cases are people who ran on that. You know, at the end of the article, I asked, what would have happened if you'd had a local, I guess, I don't know if I put it this
a trio
strongly.
Of elected Republicans.
Yeah, if you had elected Republicans going after a former Democratic president or any Democratic office holder, their partisanship would have been the very first thing talked about. And here it's something that is buried so that you can talk about the embarrassment it is to Trump.
And then in Letitia James's case, NBC had seven labels or, described her as a Democrat seven of 26 stories. Once again, we have ABC, 1 out of 44 stories, CBS, 1 out of 35. And here again, you're being nice because you're like, there was a fleeting on-screen graphic shown for less than 2 seconds, you know, identifying James as a Democrat.
That was on ABC.
Yeah.
On CBS, it was just running a picture of a Trump direct mail email message saying she should keep her filthy hands off Trump Tower that called her a Democrat. It was not part of the reporter's script. The reporter drew no attention to it. It was more, but you saw it, and therefore I felt I had to count it. But I don't think, you know, that's bending over backwards to not have the shutout.
This is why, though, we want to underline this for a second. I mean, the whole time we've been doing this here at the Media Research Center, we try to sort of say, we're not going to sort of tilt it in a way that a moderate centrist type wouldn't come in and say, well, that was unfair of you. I remember in particular, I think it was Obamacare. No, maybe it was Obamacare. And we had Republicans on Obamacare and we had Democrats on Obamacare. And we were counting like John Chafee of Rhode Island as a Republican on Obamacare, even though I don't think he was particularly anti-Obamacare, but he was a Republican.
Right,
so
he was.
So we counted it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is the same thing. I think you're right to count it because it was on screen and you might have seen it. But it is kind of comical that it's not actually being vocalized.
Right. Yes. You really have to bend over backwards if you're ABC or CBS to leave it out of virtually every single story because you simply are trying not to draw attention to it. NBC, I think, was more careful at mentioning it as a fact, that it's not in dispute, it is a fact. They tended to do it only, I think, when Trump or somebody on the Trump camp was drawing attention to that fact. But they didn't shy away from it. They didn't bury it. CBS and ABC tried to bury it. And essentially, as you're pointing out, they did it as completely as they could, but it did leak out here and there.
And then Fannie Willis, the Fulton County, Georgia district attorney, this is Atlanta. All right, so she's not a statewide official elected in Georgia. Stacey Abrams couldn't get elected in Georgia. One of the things they don't say is, yes, who is the Manhattan DA to prosecute a president of the United States? You know, once again, I think we could argue this, that maybe if some, the DA of Dallas-Fort Worth or whatever, Tarrant County, you know, the way they went after Tom DeLay, or was that in Austin?
Anyway, that was Austin, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, a local DA, well, it was okay with Tom DeLay. It was okay.
It was a Democrat going after a Republican, and it became about the case. And when a Republican goes after a Democrat, it's about their partisanship.
Now I seem to remember, forgive me, Isn't that that was the case where Dan Rather went to a fundraiser for this guy, or his daughter was involved, and it was like, oh no, I'm not too biased to do this story. All right, Fonnie Willis. This was almost perfect. ABC's World News Tonight and CBS Evening News did 99 stories together with zero.
Right. It never even appeared on screen.
Whereas NBC got to 8 times out of 50. And they're like, they did 16%. And they're the responsible ones. Yes, overall, that's 95% ignored. And this just underlines, once again, you know, Fonnie Willis, that's a bit of a mess with all of the Nathan Wade romance and, you know, all of these things that have been big problems. Every one of them is treated as the most serious, sober, nonpartisan.
Well, that's the misimpression you get, is that these are nonpartisan prosecutors who have been prosecutors their whole lives, and that's their career. You know, they're like the cop on the beat finding a crime. And the answer is no, they're Democrats. I mean, you know, Bragg is an interesting case because the Democratic DA before him, Cyrus Vance, son of the former Jimmy Carter Secretary of State, mm-hmm. Looked at the same crime, essentially, the same allegations, and decided there was no case. He did not bring one. Even Democratic DAs have passed on some of these things as too out there and too outlandish to pursue. Bragg is doing it. Is that to his credit, or does that show that he's reaching? I guess we'll find out in a few weeks.
Well, and I think Bragg originally said he wasn't going to do it. And two of his staff members resigned because they were furious he wasn't going to do it. And then he decided he was going to do it.
Right. And I think, you know, the original idea is that, there, you know, you show restraint unless you have a slam dunk case because it's too upsetting to the world of politics and too destabilizing to the nation. That might be the responsible course of action when it comes to something as fraught as this.
Well, let me follow through with something that's not here in the study, but just about in the Bragg trial that's going on right now, the kind of terminology that they love to use on this. Some conservatives, I know when I listen to Mark Levin or Larry O'Connor at night or in the morning, and they've taken exception to them using the term hush money, I guess because it has mob overtones, but clearly you could argue it's money to hush someone. A non-disclosure agreement. The big point they've made, obviously, is there's nothing illegal about getting somebody to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But they made it sound really sketchy. And what all of this comes down to is where you categorize this expense. Was it a legal expense or was this a business expense? And you, again, if we changed the parties, they'd say, why is this a huge matter?
Well, we did change the parties. You know, something relatively similar to this happened in the John Edwards case.
Yes.
He didn't use his own money or his business's money. He used a donor to his campaign, gave him money to pay off, I think it was a filmographer who was working his campaign who was having his baby. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to keep that quiet. Did he want to keep that quiet for political purposes, like they're alleging about Trump? Did he want to keep it quiet because of his family situation? Which could also be a plausible story in Trump's case. Who knows? But he was brought to trial on that and acquitted because it was simply too difficult to figure it out. And there he was using a campaign donor just for a donation to a different cause, not the campaign. And that was a jury couldn't see that as a direct line to a campaign finance violation. Here it's more detached. You have Bragg saying that something that came out of the Trump, I don't know if it was a Trump company or Trump's personal money, I don't know which it was, but it had nothing to do with the campaign, is somehow, you know, a clear-cut campaign finance violation such that, I don't know what the penalty is, but it's some number of years in prison, which I think most people would find maybe not a slam dunk case.
Well, and they love to also call this the criminal trial or the criminal fraud trial because they want to put the word criminal next to the name Trump. That to me sort of bothers me. It's like, again, you could say, well, this is not an inaccurate word. Well, but it's an emotionally, it's a loaded word.
Right. I suspect that if this was a Democrat in the hot seat, you'd be hearing the phrase innocent until proven guilty many, many times.
In fact, see, this is one of those things where we would say to ourselves, how much did we do on the John Edwards? what was her name? Bunny something.
Bunny Mellon.
Bunny Mellon, which is a funny name all on its own. Yes, from the Mellons, the Andrew Mellons.
Yes, I believe she was at roughly 100 years old when this started, and she did a videotape deposition just in case she didn't make it to trial.
But I bet you that was not exactly 200 minutes of airtime on the networks.
No, and while, you know, Edwards was out of the Senate and his campaign was over when it came to trial, but there's no suggesting that if none of this scandal had broken out, whether he would have been trying for a rerun in 2016 or 2020, or, you know, he was still a young person. Mm-hmm. He could have had a career if he wasn't tarnished by this scandal. So the exposure and the trial may have dented his career. It's...
Well, this is sort of the point. I mean, I think we all know, you know, Kevin McCarthy was on Howie Kurtz on Sunday, and he said, how many of these legal actions would be underway if Trump decided not to run for president again? You know, I mean, I think the Democrats would still want to go after him, but there just wouldn't be the incentive like there is here for them to have so many of these things. And so many of them being what the Clintons would have said, this stuff is all remarkably antiquated news. You know, the E. Jean Carroll accusations, which, you know, the Clintons would have said was completely antiquated.
Well, but remember, there was a little bit of a difference in Bill Clinton throughout his term as president. You know, he fought everything. Mm-hmm. But then on his last day in office, when he was exposed and facing real legal jeopardy, he settled. He made a deal. He I think it was some money in his law license, but he didn't, continue to fight after he was president, because then there was no further need. It's the political ambition that you see these prosecutors trying to stop in Trump's case. They're trying to sort of be a roadblock to him running for office, and therefore they're trying to be a roadblock to voters voting for him again.
Yeah, and then we were making the point back then that, boy, they did not want to mention to anybody that Clinton had been disbarred. I mean, it was negotiated disbarment, but...
It snuck in at the very end of his last day in office. Peter Jennings, I remember saying it was a very sad, sad way to go. But, you know, it was eclipsed by the Bush inauguration, of course, but it was also eclipsed by the fact that there was a number of other scandals that broke on his last day in office, including him handing out pardons to people who... were very sketchy people.
Oh, Mark Rich.
And then taking things from the White House that maybe didn't belong to them and having them go in the moving vans. But it wasn't classified documents, as was alleged with Trump. It was like the furniture. It was the expensive gifts. Mm-hmm. And so there was, you know, it was a couple weeks of sort of rough headlines for the Clintons that, you know, eclipsed the opening of the Bush administration as well and took his political oxygen out of the air.
Well, I mean, look, we've been at this a long time. And one of the most obvious places where the media demonstrate a dramatic double standard is ethics or scandals, whatever, however you want, corruption, however you want to define it. I mean, so yes, I came in doing Jim Wright.
Right.
And selling a phony book. And
he didn't sell the book. People just bought the book as a way.
In big boxes.
In big boxes. And, you know, why is that a crime? Well, the answer is yes, you have the AFL-CIO buying 30,000 copies to store it. Is the way of the AFL-CIO giving him whatever the royalty would be, $100,000 advance.
Well, this is where, for the young people, Rich, we have to say, Jim Wright was a congressman from Texas.
That's right.
Speaker of the House for a short time.
Right. But and when he was caught, he said it was all mindless cannibalism.
That's right.
That anybody was trying to hold him accountable for what, you know, but, you know, back then, you know, you had an argument that, you know, both sides saw corruption when it existed and they were willing to police their own side. You know, Democrats love to say Republicans now aren't doing that because they're so focused on Trump. It doesn't happen on either side. You don't see a lot of Democrats saying, you know, why did every member of the Biden family become rich after Joe Biden became a senator? You know, what did they do for all that money? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe there's, you know, something is going on there that deserves being investigated. You talk about Curtis, you know, tallying airtime for the Trump trial. Now, Trump is in a league of his own as a former president mm-hmm. and a front runner. Well, okay, you've got a senator from New Jersey, current, in office, going up for his corruption trial this summer. Let's see how much airtime that gets if people explain all the disturbing details about that. And then you have the president's son going on trial for his, I think it's tax fraud in the summer. Let's see how much airtime that gets, because, you know, the Hunter Biden trial will be more about Hunter Biden's tax. It'll be also where he got the money and his connections. There'll be a lot of embarrassing details, I'm presuming, unless he makes a settlement at the last minute, for the Biden family. And it's a political year. Why not give that airtime? Well, let's see. It probably won't be the 203 minutes that you've found so far, and we're not even on day three of the testimony.
That's why. That's exactly why it's a good idea. I mean, I think we came into this and saying to ourselves, the biggest story for us to do on this is the volume, the amount of coverage. Now, obviously, the labeling and stuff is important. But as we started at the beginning, is it hush money? I guess so. Is it a criminal trial? I guess so. The idea that Bragg charged him with 34 felonies seems like egregiously overdone, so they can all say Trump has 91 felonies. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I think that was there was 34 felonies because there were 17 checks and each one counts twice, you know, once when it went out and once when it was booked. I mean, it's something that's, you know, it's a very, very technical arrangement to get to 34, but it's really one thing that happened.
And it's right. They make it sound so much worse, because if we went back and tried to count how many times they said 91 felony counts, I mean, they just can't stop saying that kind of stuff. And now they dropped a few of the counts.
In Georgia, yeah.
In Georgia. And I think they stopped saying 91 because it ain't 91 anymore. But it has been used against him. And yeah, they're all historic. They love calling it historic. And again, Mrs. Graham would be like, well, it is. They've never tried a former president before. I know, but it's all sound and fury against Trump. And so I'm just like, I know it's historic, but we know that they overuse historic for things that they want to decide they're the historians.
Right. Everything is historic because it's all happening and it's going to be recorded someplace. I mean, I guess I come at this as someone who's looked at, I didn't want to add up how many campaigns, but, you know, 8, 10, I don't know.
Well, you and Brent Baker were doing this stuff in college in the 84 election? Or was that too young?
He was 84. I was 88 when I started doing this for the Center for Media and Public Affairs. So 88 is how many elections ago?
Yes.
But I will just say, I don't like the idea that we're going to have a debate about the next president that is so focused on a very narrow criminal allegation against one person and not so much an examination of the records of both of these people, because they were both presidents. You can look at their records and put them in contrast to each other and their proposals for the future. I mean, that's what the public normally looks at. And that has been shunted aside in this campaign in the media coverage. And so I'm not entirely sure how valuable any of this is going to be. People have made up their minds about Trump's culpability, and an acquittal or a conviction isn't going to change anybody's mind about his underlying character. What people are going to be voting about, though, is the future.
Yes, is that they can't understand how they could vote for Trump again. And it's sort of like, because you have a choice between the Republicans in charge and the Democrats in charge.
Right.
It's as simple as that. People are going to vote based on which team they're on.
Yes. Some Republicans have said that, you know, the fact that Trump is going up in the polls or leading Biden in the polls with all these indictments is proof that the public thinks it's overkill. I don't think that's the marginal voter that's made a switch from Biden to Trump. I think they're switching from Biden to Trump because Biden's done a poor job. And I think if Biden had done a 50% approval job, I don't think any of this would be an issue. It's the fact that Biden is at such a low ebb in the polls because of his job performance that any of this really resonates. And, you know, that's if this is all we talk about for the next 6 months, you know, it's going to be an opportunity to talk about the future wasted.
Yeah, I think this is a point that you've made in the other study you did, basically, of coverage of Trump in 2023. And that is how remarkable, what a large majority of coverage of Trump and coverage of the Republican primary campaign was overwhelmingly about Trump's legal problems and not about the issues. My whole theory was they didn't want to put on sound bites of Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis saying negative things about Biden's policies.
Well, I think that's the case. The other thing I'll say, you know, we don't have numbers on it, but they are expanding the pie a little bit. I got to a little bit of this. There's more issues out there. But the top issue right now, I think, policy-wise, is abortion, because the media, I think, are agreeing with Democratic pollsters that this is a way to galvanize Democratic voters, not Republican voters. And so they're having a lot of Trump abortion policy stories. It doesn't go up against the trial, but it's up there.
The same
more than the economy and Biden.
They got really excited about IVF in Alabama. And I think it is that sort of thing. Here again, your coverage of the issues depends on which issues the Democrats think they can win with. Well, that shouldn't be. This is where we laugh and go, this is not news judgment. This right. is deciding which issues you want the Democrats to win on is not right. news judgment.
And, you know, I'm getting a little far afield now, but the bottom line post Dobbs is that abortion is going to be handled by state elected leaders. There's almost no scenario where you're going to supermajorities in the Congress to set a national policy one way or another. Presidents appointed to the Supreme Court is probably not going to matter one way or another for the future of abortion policy the way it did when Roe was in force. So it's going to be at the state level. So, you know, talking about Trump or Biden on abortion is almost immaterial except to rouse the emotions and the passions of their bases.
Well, and I think that, as usual, as it's been true the entire time we've been doing this, they have always presumed that abortion was a loser for Republicans. They were saying this in 92 and 96, you know, when we were young.
Right.
They were saying, oh, the Republicans' platform on abortion is going to be terrible for them. Ronald Reagan will never get reelected being against the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right.
And then he won 49 states. Oops.
Well, the second time.
Well, yes.
The first time he only won 40.
Right. The ERA, were still talking about the ERA in 84.
But in 2008, I did a study. I'm not sure about, you know, I'll speak generally because I don't have it in front of me. But it was about partial birth abortion and the votes Barack Obama cast, the state senator in Illinois. And he was out there on sort of the radical flank of the left on abortion. You know, he had positions that Joe Biden had voted against in the United States Senate. I think that Hillary Clinton had voted against that were outside the mainstream of the Democratic Party at that time. And it was not a campaign issue. It was barely covered. I think it was a small number of stories. And that was it. You know, if it had been something where, you know, they were equal opportunity destroyers, they would have made his transgressions on abortion as big as the Republican Party being out of step with some voters now. But they didn't.
It reminds me then of the study I did, and we'll stop talking about all the studies we did, but the 60 Minutes review, all the interviews that Steve Croft did with Barack Obama in 2008 and 9 and so on. And they barely talked about the issues. And I believe they never talked about the votes he cast in Illinois. Right. It was all about, is America, you know, racially advanced enough to vote for you? I mean, that there was so much questioning about his personal life, his personal history, his, right. you know, gauzy notions of race. They really didn't talk about his record,
right, which would be the reason to vote for someone if it was a good record.
Well, yeah, I mean, they ran him as on his biography without really looking at what he did as a politician. It was a much broader
right
fairy tale, so to speak, or life story.
It was about his 2004 campaign speech talking about unity. Remember how united we were under the Obama presidency.
Well,
maybe better than we are.
Yeah, just like Biden was going to restore the soul of the nation. Oh, right. Well, I think we all knew by that point that was, at least for us, was a laugh line. Thanks for coming in, Rich. It's always good to talk to you.
All right. Every 2.5 years.
It's more fun in person than trying to do it over Zoom. But we're glad you popped in. And yeah, keep track of this. Rich is still tracking it. Curtis is still tracking it. How they're covering the Trump trials, the Trump legal issues. And for all of that, you come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.